where the Buffalo Roam 1200.
Joining as an expansion team in 1970, this franchise has featured stars like left winger Rick Martin and goalie Dominic Hasek. Isaac.
Or the Sabres.
Right.
Who are the Sabres indeed? That should have been a question. What is Sabres life, Duffer? That should have been on Jeopardy. And we would have been featured on the show. Although, I'll tell you this. Isaac won, so he's going to the finals for the Tournament of Champions because he got the final Jeopardy right, but that gave him a nice boost in games. So they don't usually do good on hockey question or sports question, Duffer. I think we should have our very own Sabres Live Jeopardy sports tournament and make it happen.
It's going to be hard to do when the show's canceled.
Well, we're not going to get canceled.
We are canceled. We're not on tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We're not on tomorrow. Tomorrow is a day off, and then in a couple of weeks, we're going to skip a Monday, Tuesday as well. So we're getting a light schedule here.
Called a precursor. It's foreshadowing.
It's because of my voice. It's because of my voice. They're giving me a day off. So everybody's taking off. Yeah.
Well, a more relevant Jeopardy question would have, been pertaining to the current roster or lack thereof because of the uncertainty. Who knows who's playing on Saturday against Nashville?
Yeah. Will he play?
They definitely
on
wouldn't
Saturday.
Have answered that correctly. I can assure you of that.
Who is unsure of playing on Saturday? Is Tage Thompson, Dylan Cousins, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, Tyson Kozak. You've got all these guys that are dealing with Bäckmalmsson with some ailments. So who knows what that's going to look like right now? If I'm looking at the forward group, I'm looking at. There could potentially be only 9 forwards available for the game. If Malenstein's not available, if Dylan Cousins isn't available, if Tage Thompson isn't available, like the Sabres finished last game with 10 forwards, and that included Dylan Cousins. So they could be down to 9 if any of these guys are available for Saturday.
Right, but Kozak certainly appears likely.
Appears likely, but again, like,
I mean, maybe I'm overstating it, but like if you're sick,
and then you
come back and you're back in practice. I mean, Zucker came back quicker than expected, despite being at the bottom of the barrel from an illness standpoint. So,
yeah, and I think that would be fair. But again, now you're saying, okay, you got 10 forwards with Isaac Rosanne and Tyson Kozak in your lineup, right? I mean, it's a different group of 12. I mean, maybe Sam Lafferty comes back in, and after the
Lafferty comes back in.
Yeah, I mean, right? or do you say, oh, you know what, we'll call somebody up from Rochester and give somebody an opportunity for one game in Nashville, knowing that, putting guys on the IR right now, it doesn't matter. They would only miss one game because you have 2 weeks off after that. So you could do a lot of roster flexibility with wanting to do whatever you want with IR movement or call-ups. You have everything because it's just one game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more you verbalize this, A, not knowing whether Thompson's coming back, but okay, so you finished with 10. You subtract Cousins potentially, but you simply insert Kozak and Lafferty and you're at 11 and you go 11 and 7 like they've done 100 times.
That maybe is the simple
it's
answer.
It's really not that hard, I don't think. But
well, this is like Isaac on Jeopardy. He's like, who are the Sabres? Very simple. Everybody probably is guessing, like, who are the Buffalo Bills or Bulls or Bandits or not knowing the answer, right? So, look, it maybe is as simple as Kozak, Lafferty are in, and you're sticking with 7D. Look,
you may also have Cousins and Thompson here, so
that could be available for the game. So,
that would be my hunch is that they're going to be a lot closer to full health than what this off day from practice speculation is leading us down.
Yeah, today's a day off, and tomorrow they're going to practice and fly out to Nashville for a 8 p.m. Puck drop Eastern time Saturday, 7:30. We're going to be on the pregame. But also, sometimes you schedule things. Like they did have the skate yesterday. Often you'll take a day off and then you'll skate 2 days in a row. But we had an event last night at Seneca Niagara Casino with the team. And so that was good. So today is a day off. You get the event, it's great charity event last night. And then you move on to your last game before the break, which you could win 5 in a row. You could make a big difference. Look at the way that the Eastern Conference is doing right now. I get it. You're last in the Eastern Conference. But, I mean, going into the break, having won 5 in a row would be somewhere to step off in 3 weeks when everything returns.
You have any idea who they're playing in a couple of weeks?
When they return on the 22nd?
Yeah, without looking, but you're looking, so you're
No, I'm
cheating.
Not looking. I remember that it was the 22nd because Jordan Greenway is expected to play on the 22nd, but I have no idea who that's against.
Apparently, it's the Rangers.
Okay. Well, the Rangers are doing better now, so that's good for them. They won last
Apparently,
night.
Apparently, it's Anaheim after that. And then Carolina, then Montreal, and then all heck breaks loose because once you get into March. Well, honestly, the end of February, from the 25th to all the way into April 1st, you're looking at, you know, close to 20 games in well under 40 days. Like, it's obviously based on inserting this break into the schedule, there's a unfortunate fallout, my opinion, clearly not anybody else's, and it becomes wickedly compressed. So you start going at a pace for about 5 to 6 weeks of more than every other day. And so it's great if you're trying to climb the ladder.
You got lots of games in a short time.
You got lots of games. So you shouldn't be sitting there thinking, oh, we lost. No. Just keep winning. Keep gaining ground. That's the whole thing. But, you know, we're starting the show here talking about roster and who's in and who's out. That becomes the time of year where your depth gets critically tested. Plus, about 10 days into that stretch, you have the trade deadline. So who knows what to anticipate?
Well, you're right. Who knows what to anticipate? Because depending on how you are between now and March 7th, it may lead to some changes, you know, one way or the other. Or maybe nothing, because you're in a position where you're like, okay, we're going to stay status quo because of where we are. And there's some teams that are going to be in the same category. There's a lot of rumors flying around right now. We've heard the rumors on Bo Byram for a while and Dylan Cousins for a while. So we're going to have Shayna Goldman join us and Darren Dreger later in the show. But, I mean, there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of people calling the Buffalo Sabres right now ahead of this Four Nations face-off, but also wanting to see what is their plan moving forward. Well, I don't think there's a plan right now. I mean, there's probably multiple plans, but not one definite plan as to what they want to do.
Here's one from out of left field for you.
Oh.
You have any idea what's up with Yaroslav Askarov?
Like he got called up after the All-Star break and...
Well, what do you mean called up? He's been up with San Jose forever based on the Vanecek injury.
Yeah, but I think didn't they send him down just for paper transaction, called him back up or something?
Probably, because I can't find record of the transaction, and he's not listed on the game notes for San Jose anymore, and he's not listed in their statistics, and I'm like, what happened to this man?
They wiped him off the face of the earth.
It's ridiculous. It's, you know, I complain about this a lot when we pick up a set of game notes and somebody who's not on the active roster, all of a sudden their contributions to the team have disappeared for the season. I'm like, well, that's not right. But like literally between the AHL site and looking at San Jose's game notes today, it's like Askarov is nowhere to be found. You go to the AHL site, you see an X beside his name because that means he's up with the he's up with the big club. And you go to the big club, it's like, you know, he's not here.
He's in transit. He's in transit. They kind of don't know.
He's in San Jose either way.
but he's in transit from one locker room to the other. Like it takes a while to walk across with your equipment. No. That is one out of left
field. It's weird, right?
Like, my goodness, though. Like, okay, so last night we had the charity event and I'm there and talking with, you know, our buddy David Leggio, who's there, there was other people, goalies that we were talking shop. We're talking goalies. And my first question to Leggio, because he's good buddy with Podorowski. So he watched that whole game the other night with San Jose and Montreal. And I look over and I'm like, how bad was Georgiev? And he goes, dude, he can't catch a puck. It looks like he forgot to play goalie. Like we went on this tangent of Georgiev and how he seems lost. and how San Jose is probably not the best place for him to gain his confidence back. Like he, they're not the best of teams, and so it just it's a bad situation.
You guys would know better. I think I sometimes view it like, and confidence is a tricky word, but like, I sometimes look. Let's be honest. How many goaltenders in the last 12 years came through here and exceeded expectations from Anders Lindback to, you know what I mean? So I'm sorry. That's how I look at those situations. Like, you know, the team's not pressed for standings points. You can do everything you've been capable of without fear of, you know, backlash from fans, management, coaches, because you're not going to the playoffs. You know what I mean? Anyway. That's neither here nor there. Yep. Interesting topic, but yes. And on that line of, you know, thinking, training is important for wherever your next step is in development. So we want you to enter to win the Ultimate Youth Hockey Training Pack. It includes a regulation net with backstop, easy puck shooting board, bucket of pucks, maybe an autograph from Marty. Visit sabres.com/training to enter today. Shayna,
bucket of pucks. Yeah, I want that just for the bucket of pucks. I lose pucks all the time when I'm on the ice for practice.
That was also
it's the worst thing with youth hockey. You lose pucks everywhere, and your bucket just kind of dwindles practice after practice after practice, and they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. They're the things that always go missing. Even when you have something with like that nice cage, it's like there's a hole somewhere, and that puck's going to find it.
Also the most overused cliche as we approach the trade deadline, right? Throwing a bucket of pucks.
I would take this play. I wouldn't take this play for a bucket of pucks. Like, you know what? There's value there.
A dozen hockey sticks is worth a lot of money, though. When you consider that sticks are $300 a pop, a dozen of them, that's almost $4,000. So that's worth a lot if you get a dozen sticks.
There you go.
Shayna, I don't know if you knew this, but our show's being canceled specifically tomorrow. That's why you're on early. Yeah. So
they knew I was coming, and they were like, we got to cut her before she can say something. We don't know what's coming out of her mouth this week.
I swore. Well, I didn't swear. I used a bad word on the show 2 weeks ago. So they're like, bad influence, Shayna. She is on Marty. So that's what it is.
I somehow haven't slipped up here because I think before I speak, when I do things, when I'm not supposed to curse, like too many men, it's just coming out.
You had 16 minutes to hold true to that. we'll see where it goes.
I'll do my best.
Okay. Big money. Again, for the second time in his career, it's always nice when you have people in your corner. And clearly, Marcus Pettersson has had Jim Rutherford in his corner for a long time. So much so that the Pettersson family, for generations, will benefit from this incredible relationship and admiration for a player who Marty and I enjoyed immediately in his early days with Pittsburgh, which was not his first organization. He started with Anaheim. Rutherford brought him to Pittsburgh. But now Pettersson, after a very, very, very short period of time in Vancouver, has himself a monster contract extension at 5 years and $33 million. Again, I like the player, but I lean on you, Shayna, to give us a little bit of perspective as to what Pettersson's value is, presumably from like defensive metrics, because that's what he is more geared towards, but also now because he's at the front end of signing an extension from a defensive player's standpoint as we get into this era of watching the salary cap explode.
Yeah. It's always funny how like these old school general managers have their guys, right? And Marcus Pettersson's definitely that. But like, there are worse defensemen to put your flag in the ground for, I would say, because he's actually good. And we know the Canucks are so intent on collecting Pettersson's. And here you go. Okay, it's not a bad contract. I actually kind of like the deal. I don't like what the Canucks spent to bring him to Vancouver. I don't like that they moved their first round pick that quickly. I thought it was an overpayment, even with the extension in mind. But if we set that aside, because we have to compartmentalize our hockey analysts sometimes, The contract itself is not bad, in my opinion, because you look at what he's worth, and when you account for the rising salary cap, it's going to benefit the middle class the most, right? We hear superstars, they're going to be worth $20 million. Maybe they will be, maybe they won't be, but you're going to hear this like middle class benefit, and maybe we won't be debating so much what they're worth, because how agonizing is it sometimes that a second pair defenseman gets paid and everyone's like, well, the team's going to regret that, and you don't even focus on the fact if he's a fit, if it works. You're just so focused on the dollars and cents. So I hope that this kind of alleviates that a little bit, but into the dollars and cents, I like this deal for him. I think he's worth a little bit more than that with the rising cap in mind. I think this comes in right below his market value. If you look at Dom's model over at The Athletic, and I believe he tweeted the player card with this already, he had this range I feel he was going to go. And I think the ideal player model for him in terms of contract and what he gives to a lineup is someone like Esa Lindell, right? Because he's not the play driver on his pair. He's never going to be. But he is someone who can keep up and complement a top pair defenseman who is offense, which is a skill to have, right? Not everybody can do it their defensive weight. And he has some good puck moving skills. He's a good puck retriever. He's good at exiting the zone. He just doesn't shoot the puck as much as Lindell. So that's going to be the one difference in their points. But they still fall in like a similar range. So that contract was $5.8 million a year that's ending this year for Lindell. So he's really close to that. I think it's a good range to be in. He's below the Brady Shea mark, which I think it should have been the goal for Vancouver, especially when he's not going to be their top pair guy and Nashville viewed Shea as a little bit more. I think he's in the right range for what he is.
Okay, so then my next question leads on to Bo Byram, because Bo Byram is going to need a new contract, and Marcus Pettersson is $5.5 million. Brady Shea is $7 million. Do you anticipate Bo Byram in Buffalo or elsewhere to get more than the $7 million that Brady Shea got as a UFA last year and be like in that $7 to $7.5 million range for Bo Byram?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, because he's someone who should benefit from this rising cap, right? Because I think otherwise you would have seen him in a lower range, and I feel like this opens the door to him earning more. It'll be interesting to see what the signing team views him as. And we see in Buffalo, he's being viewed as more than he was in Colorado, right? In Colorado, he was stuck on the third pair in sheltered minutes because it was just the reality of the depth ahead of him. While in Buffalo, despite having more lefties, you can make the case for him to get more minutes. It's going to be interesting, though, because the Sabres have big cap, you know, contracts already on defense. How many defensemen, how many left-handed defensemen? I know Dahlin generally plays on the right, but how many left-handed defensemen can you invest in is going to be a good question to ask. Is $7 million asking for too much? Can you go that cheap on the right to balance it out? And it's always a good question to have. Another team might view it differently because they might have a bigger hole on the left side. And it's always interesting when you get into the lefty-righty discussion because the righties are generally worth more. And I think a general manager would have an easier time giving that right-handed defenseman that $7 million versus the lefty, even if the lefty is what they actually need. So it like convolutes the whole situation a little bit further, but I could definitely see him, especially the fact that he's younger. You're making a bet at a different time than you would be for a Lindell, for a Pettersson, right? And I think that's the biggest part of it. If you sign him to $7 million, you are projecting that his peak value, which is the prime of his career, which he's entering, is what you're paying for, instead of getting into those nitty gritty years into his mid 30s where you'd be so worried about it.
Right. Like, you know, Pettersson's already late 20s, and obviously we saw JT Miller and, you know, his contract. And it's a great point with Byram, and it's really important. That's why I led with Pettersson, because it's just these are areas where Sabre fans are wondering, like, what not only what do you do with Byram, but like, if you're trying to balance that group and bring in a more defensive type of player, like what is the market going to bear? And honestly, like we're traveling towards the trade deadline here, and you get similar names coming up that have been there in years past. And certainly Buffalo as a market, a fan base, watched Rasmus Ristolainen forever. And now, because he's a right shot defenseman, and it doesn't really matter what he's done the last 8 years, his name, and we know he makes about $5 million a year, like he becomes a talking point again here. Like this, you see how all this is connected, right? Like
it's, Cody Ceci went for partial return, was a first and a potential third. And I know that
Cody went for nothing. It was Granlin. Granlin got all the value of that. Ceci was a throw-in. I'm kidding.
Yeah, the value of a right-handed defenseman around this time of year is why the value of centers as we saw last year, explodes around the deadline. And I think it's going to again this year, depending on who is and isn't available. Say Brock Nelson's not available. The rest of the centers just got more expensive. Mm-hmm. And the price of right-handed defensemen at this time of year, we saw Ben Chiarot go for a first-round pick in years past. A third-pair defenseman.
Yeah, actually, Ben's former agent, Darren Dreger, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, so. that was a pump-up job by Dregs for many shows here on Sabres Live. That's all he kept talking about. Hey, let me ask you this, Shayna, because we know the cap is going up. And I remember when I came into the NHL in 1999-2000, Bob Goodenow kept saying, guys, he was building it up for 4 years before the lockout. We can't take a cap because what's going to happen is the more the cap continue to rise, the more the top guys are going to make their money and the middle guys are not going to be ascending as much. So I look at this cap in 3 years could be $113.5 million. And all I keep thinking is it only benefits the top end players that are going to make a lot of money. The Mikko Rantanen that won $14 million and the Connor McDavid that's going to get $16 and Mitch Marner. Am I far off here thinking that it only going to benefits the big money clubs and the big money players at the end of the day?
I actually do. Because here's the thing. In this cap world, Connor McDavid shouldn't be worth $16 million. He should be a $20 million player, in my opinion, right? If we're going to go like apples to apples, this is what a superstar is worth in this cap world. It is much more than we're going to project for him. I don't know if he'll ever get to that because superstars in this game generally don't get their worth. When Leon Draisaitl signed that big contract or when Austin Matthews did, right? We're looking at going, they could have pushed for more. They would have been well within their rights for what they're truly worth at this stage in their career to their teams or just in the market that it is, right? Nathan MacKinnon making $12.5 million is an underpayment. Then it's going to be an underpayment forever. So I think superstar players are going to benefit from it because I think that if they say I want 14, that's going to be a reality when it wasn't before, right? But I really do think the middle class is going to benefit here because a lot of teams already have their cores locked up. And this is where it's going to be the most intriguing to me. And it's something I know I'm working on for during the break is whether you're in a better position if you lock up your core before you're a good team, during that, or after that. If you lock up your core after it, I think those middle class players are going to benefit way more. Think of the Chernaks of the world and the Shirellis who got those big deals from Tampa Bay after they already won. Think of Yanni Gord, I'm sorry, he was already under contract. Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow getting those big deals because other people want those championship caliber players. I think there's going to be more of a willingness to spend for those players when maybe there wouldn't have been now because people went, we could find our own dollar store versions, which is how they should be pursuing things in the first place. So I do wonder if the middle class is going to benefit a little bit more here, especially around the teams that already have their cores locked up, like maybe the New Jersey Devils.
You mentioned the Devils. What are you expecting from them here? As far as acquisitions, things of that nature. And just a quick update on them, like Siegenthaler got hurt the other night. They have some injuries in their depth, but, in the American League, but this could be an opportunity for Simone Nemitz to come up and have a bigger role. So that's interesting in the sense of not having to potentially leave their organization to balance things out here in wake of injuries. But the Devils have also been rumored for a long time to be trying to fix slash improve their top nine. What do you see?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to have that defensive depth because Nemec is better than the AHL. He's been better for a while. I think when their defensive game slipped off in January, they should have given him a call up just to mix and match their pairs because they were sticking to the same thing and it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. Here you have someone who could have shaken things up and they wouldn't do it. So it kind of forces them into using him and figuring out how to, revive their defense because it needs it. Siegenthaler has been one of the best defensemen this year. So losing him hurts. But the fact that you have that in your back pocket is great. I would definitely look at upgrades up front. I don't think it's a bad thing for them to add another center that they trust because we've seen a lot of injuries over the last couple of years to Heischer and Hughes. And I'm not saying either one's injury prone, but it's a good thing to have an extra center. To have that versatility that you can mix and match your lines if you need, and you're not just stuck to certain patterns. And I don't know how much they trust Mercer to play that role. I keep wanting him to break back out at center and it doesn't happen enough. So I'm curious if they do go that direction, but if not, and you can lower your cost because you trust Mercer and it's no big deal and you have Howland and you have four players in your top nine who can play center, maybe you don't need to worry about that as much. They need a good winger. They need somebody else to help drive play that isn't right now, Bratton Hughes. They need somebody else to like take things up a notch. I would have liked Taylor Hall for them. Obviously, that's not an option now, but there's going to be other wingers out there. I don't think they need to go for the hard to play against. I don't think they need to go for the, well, they're a bona fide playoff player. You have Palat for that, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they move him in a deal, I still think they'll be okay. I think they need another play-driving winger to take what was a huge strength and really bring it back up there, because I think that's the one area that you look at and go, okay, there's gaps that maybe you didn't anticipate having.
Okay, let me take it back to the Atlantic Division, because we're all focusing on the wild card race in the Eastern Conference, but there's a race for third place in the Atlantic right now. Ottawa is in third at 62 points. Detroit, 61 points. Tampa, 60. Boston is 60. There's a bit of a mashup happening right there. Who ends up finishing third in the Atlantic Division? Who do you see that's going to separate themselves and be with Toronto and Florida for the top three teams there?
I still think it's going to be Tampa Bay. They have the elite talent, and I think they're going to make a move or two at the deadline to bolster their depth, which is their biggest weakness of all. And as they get healthier and everything's fine, you get Moser on the blue line. I'm not so worried about Tampa Bay. Ottawa, I think, deserves it. They're earning it. But oh my goodness, those injuries. Now they lose Norris and Pinto. I'm worried about it, because you see all this, you know, all the improvements they're making defensively, and now their goaltending tandem looks really good again, and you have a healthy Ullmark, and Forsberg's elevated his game. You know you have a good third option now who's back in the AHL. It's just all of the injuries piling up and the fact that they're not generating enough offense for me. I think that they're a playoff team in the wild card race, right? But I think Tampa Bay's elite talent plus deadline moves are going to give them that little bit of a boost to finish ahead.
You think five teams from the division is going to make it? I mean, Boston's right there as well. So, you know,
I won't be surprised if the Rangers fall back into it. I'm going to be honest. I really do think that they're going to be one of the teams to do it, because it just seems to be the way. And it's the elite goaltending, the elite, in theory, core could do it. But I think it's going to be a good race between them and the Rangers for that spot. The Bruins, I'm very low on. I don't like their defense. Their power play is a wreck. They give up way too much offense when they're on the power play. The goaltending's inconsistent. The team's just not good enough. I think they need to step back and retool. Detroit, I think, is going to be right in the playoff race. It's amazing to see what a change in coach can do, because sometimes we don't see the impacts as well. And here it is, night and day. If they can make one or two moves at the deadline, get themselves a good middle six scorer, I'm a lot higher on them than I was, you know, to start the year.
Yeah, McClellan has matched Babcock for the best 20-game start behind the bench in Red Wings history, 15-4-1. Shayna, thank you. Appreciate the early visit, and I think we'll do this again next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. No swearing. She promised. And Darren Dreger tries to uphold that standard as we continue on Sabres Live after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
With hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN. Drags, it is a very challenging time for a number of teams right now dealing with injuries. Sabres certainly in that group. Some of it kind of the day-to-day nature here as they approach their final game before the break against Nashville on Saturday.
Yeah.
Bigger picture, though, it also seems like certain names on the roster can't escape the rumor mill at this point in time. What are you hearing on the Sabre front?
Oh, hearing everything on the Buffalo Sabres front, to be
fair. Are
Duffer
and I on the market? Are they trading us too?
Yeah, but the value is low. The return is
the door was wide open and you took it. Thank you.
Bucket of pucks, as we learned last segment.
Yeah,
Marty.
Not a dozen six. That's too much money.
No, hey, fellas, you deal with it every single day. As do I, and a big part of the challenge of this time of year is separating fact from fiction. And, you know, when I see certain names, I mean, Dylan Cousins has been out there really dating all the way back to the original speculation connecting the Vancouver Canucks and maybe Elias Pettersson, you know, for Byram and Cousins. And that really hasn't faded specific to Dylan. And part of me thinks it's unfair, you know, that the player should have to deal with this on a day in and day out basis. Now, he's probably developed some scar tissue and it's just kind of what the league has become. But look, Kevin Adams is no closer to trading Dylan Cousins today than he might have been back then. but he has to be open to suggestions, to offers, to any sort of scenario that is going to make Buffalo Sabres better today and in the longer term. So I don't think that anything is going to change, but it is interesting to me because now we're starting to link certain clubs. You know, Pierre LeBrun earlier this week talked about the Calgary Flames' interest in Dylan Cousins. And my pushback to Pierre was, okay, but who's coming off of Calgary's roster for Dylan Cousins? Dustin Wolfe? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Kevin Adams is going to trade, you know, a high quality player for futures. That's not at all what he's interested in doing. So that's the challenging part. There are literally 20 teams that are interested in Dylan Cousins. That makes so much sense. So now you go from Cousins to, you know, some of the speculation, loose speculation around certain guys. I had an Eastern Conference GM reach out to me this morning asking about Owen Power. And, you know, is there anything to this? Well, no, there isn't anything to it. I mean, no one has called Adams to say, hey, if you ever get to that place where you want to trade Owen, you know, let us know. No. Adams can't every single day put out the fires that continue to swirl around the roster of the Buffalo Sabres. He can't, and he has to maintain the position that I'm open to ideas, and not specific only to Kevin. That's what I'm getting from a lot of managers, guys. That's the new phrase for 2025 heading into the deadline, open for ideas, which means, hey, I don't know. I guess I have some untouchables, but if you want to have a conversation, let's have a conversation. And I think you can lump Kevin, you can lump probably a half a dozen or more managers into that category.
For the first time since he was acquired, I have seen Alex Tuck's name out there again saying, oh, he'd be a good fit in Tampa Bay. He'd be a good fit with this team, with that team. Is this the same thing? Like, it's teams wanting to be open for ideas and kind of trying to match players with opportunity, and Alex Tuck would be an error. Is there something to be said that, well, Alex Tuck would be a guy that Kevin Adams may look to get a really good return upon, because he could get a good return with Alex
Tuck? He's an excellent example because, sure, I can assure you that Adams isn't shopping Alex Tuck, but Alex Tuck makes a contending team that much better, right? The quality of game that he's capable of playing. The problem with acquiring a piece like that, again, having to overpay here, given he's got a great contract with Buffalo, you know, having to overpay, you almost have to tear apart your roster to acquire a player like that. So I would put Alex Tuck in a category of, who would be another one? Braden Schenn with the St. Louis Blues, right? You know, now Braden Schenn has no trade protection. But St. Louis is, what, 6 points out of a playoff spot? And we're going to continue to talk about that guy until March 7th. And the reason that we're even talking is because, you know, that Doug Armstrong, who's an aggressive GM, would be gathering information. He'd be assessing what the market might look like for the idea of potentially trading his captain. Doesn't want to, but if somebody's willing to stand up and pay a price that you can't turn your back on, well, then you have to consider it. And I think to a degree that Alex Tuck fits into that similar a slot of the player that every contender can envision how, again, that player would make them better. They just don't want to have to give up what they're going to have to give up to get in that game.
Give up is a tough phrase to use when a team is going through a tough stretch. You don't, the players are trying, obviously, but not getting results. I'm speaking specifically about Montreal here, who were the darlings of the league for a little bit. Now they've lost 6 of 7. And I'm wondering, do they, quote unquote, give up on this season to move forward down the road? Like, how have you viewed the landscape changing for Montreal potentially here in the last few weeks?
It is tricky, and you've painted the picture well, because Ken Hughes, you know, has to be sensitive to that market and what they've accomplished to this point of the season. And yeah, it's unfortunate that they've gone through this streak of games. The belief is that they will be better. that they will stay in the fight, and you know, whether or not they can lock down a spot, to me, it's too lofty. Every time I've checked in with Montreal, the feedback that I get is very similar. We can't take our eye off what we need to be next year, right? They needed to be competitive this year, and they've proven that they are a competitive team. But then you have to look at, okay, well, what are we talking about? Who are some of the pieces? And, you know, I look at Savard and I look at Matheson. And if you allow yourself to look into that crystal ball and you can envision the team being better next year and better the year after, that's probably without David Savard and Mike Matheson, right? Like, they're going to age out at some point in the not too distant future. So why wouldn't you take advantage of that? You know, that's a big part of why they made the trade with the Nashville Predators when they did, and they brought in Alex Carrier. Mm-hmm. And that was backfill for either Savard or Matheson. So I think they stay the course, and I think they consider and will probably move one or both of those guys. But I doubt that they dig deeper into their roster beyond that.
Dregs, I want to ask you about Ryan Hartman. He got suspended for 10 games. He's going to lose almost $500,000 because he's a repeat offender. So Instead of being about 5% of his salary in, you know, fines for the suspension, it's about 12% because it's a different formula. So he's appealing the 10-game suspension. So the process is what? He appeals to Gary Bettman. Mm-hmm. And then if the suspension remains 10 or
goes to a third party,
is he going to get to that, or are we going to see this reduce?
Well, you know, Bettman doesn't expedite this process, never has and never will. And I don't think that that's just solely to defend the decision made by George Parros and the Department of Player Safety. In this case, he's got 10 games. So he's got time working on his side. You know, what hurts Ryan Hartman, and I think that the Department of Player Safety did a good thing in explaining in the detail that they did the video as to how they got to the 10 games. You know, 663 games played. Ryan Hartman has faced league discipline, fine or suspension, every 60 games played in the National Hockey League. I mean, come on. And then four suspensions since 2023. So the rap sheet shows you evidence that this guy isn't getting it. And then you look at the play that earned him the 10-game suspension. That's a tough one to defend. You know, I get as a centerman, you know, your progress pushes you forward. I understand that maybe you lose your balance, but he plants his forearm to the back of Timmy Stützle's head. And then, you know, his body weight drives it into the ice. This one has the feel of, if there had been serious injury here, what are we talking about, man?
Like 25.
15 plus. Yeah. I mean, how do you argue that?
Yeah.
So I'd be surprised if Commissioner Bettman doesn't uphold the 10 games and then go to the third party. Yeah, sure. I mean, that's why the appeal process is there, to defend the player in this case. But again, when you look at history for Ryan Hartman, it's a tough one to overturn for me.
I know we've talked about this name a lot, but he has returned and has helped the Ducks have a bigger impact in their games. They've won five of the last six, but Trevor Zegras' name continues to float out there despite the offense being up and the results being better since he returned. What's up?
It's a good question. And I, you know, I'm starting to think of Trevor Zegras the way I do John Gibson. You know, in that his name is going to always be out there until something happens, or inevitably it doesn't happen, right? Like, and again, I think the last time we talked a little bit about this, and I brought up Vetrano's name and how when they talked about, you know, the type of extension that he signed, they acknowledged that in the not too distant future, they're going to be a cap team, which is why they needed the deferral option with Frankie Vetrano's extension. So if you see yourself being in that mode, then why are you trying to trade away a dynamic piece? A player who I think is trying his best. He's working hard to be more of a two-way forward than what he is. That's him. Look, defending in the game, is never going to be top priority for Trevor Zegras. And in that market, I don't know that it needs to be, but I think that he's got the qualities of a difference-making type of player. And that's the reason why when you get to this point leading up to the trade deadline, the rumors are out there from a media standpoint, which leads to general managers calling Pat Verbeek to say, where are you now? What sort of return do you need? And I think Verbeek at this stage is at least willing to listen.
Are we going to see Quinn Hughes, Sidney Crosby, and others, Mitch Marner, that are dealing with injuries right now, but are part of the Four Nations tournament? Like, are we going to see them actually play in the Four Nations faceoff?
Well, I think you'll see Mitch Marner play. The expectation is he plays tonight in Seattle. The other two big question marks. Mike Sullivan recently, approached the media. Sidney Crosby was briefly on the ice with the main group, and then he did some stuff on the side. So the fact that he's even skating today, I think bodes well. But, they just basically said need more evaluation to make that call on Crosby. And what a blow that would be for hockey fans, right? Like, my excitement level for the Four Nations is limited, but it's mostly there because I want to see what Sidney Crosby, Connor McDavid, and Nathan MacKinnon are capable of on the same team, same sheet ice. So you take that away, oh boy. I think the Quinn Hughes situation is the most intriguing of all. Quinn Hughes would love to be playing with the Vancouver Canucks. That's how I read it. That's how I wouldn't say he feels healthy enough, but he's a kid that can gut through. He wants to play so that he can get to the Four Nations and represent USA. And it sure sounds like the Vancouver Canucks are like, nah, you're not healthy enough, man. You're not healthy enough to play. And by extension, Four Nations at this stage looks like a long shot. But, what do they have until Monday? So there's still some time to figure all of this out.
Real quick, do you think the Kings are going to add anything? They've gone through maybe their dip. They've won two in a row. They are the best home team in the NHL, and they have a home-heavy schedule the rest of the way. So does this put them in an add mode?
Dabbling add, I would say. I asked Rob Blake about this the other day, and it was more in line with you see Drew Doughty's minutes again last night, 25-plus minutes in that win over the Montreal Canadiens. He feels like a major add. So what Blake told me was, sure, we're always looking for something, but more likely it'll be depth in the areas that you normally want to add depth, and that's up front and on defense.
Dregs, thank you so much. We'll see you again next week.
You bet. Go Eagles.
Darren Dreger, our hockey insider from TSN. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
9 in the NHL tonight. Sabres are back in action for the final time before the break on Saturday as the NHL goes into blackout mode.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll watch some college basketball, a little NBA maybe or whatnot for 2 weeks. Now we'll watch the Four Nations face-off. Hey, Duffer, do you know what the penalty shots record this year in the NHL is? Like the amount of goals for the amount of attempts?
Yeah, it's probably like close to 4 for 20 now.
It's 4 for 19, so 21.1%. It's basically the same percentage as the average power plays in the National Hockey League. So, and maybe even a little under or close. So if you're going to take a penalty, you're given a penalty shot or a penalty. It's basically the same thing. Yeah. So 4 for 19 is not a very... The first penalty shot of the season was Ryan McLeod in the game against the LA Kings at home. And his former teammate, Warren Fogle, got one last night and scored the fourth goal of the season on penalty shots.
Yeah, there's been a couple lately to up the percentage. It had been pretty meager for the shooters. But Fogle looked really good, really confident in his first ever penalty shot attempt last night. And we talked with the Dregs about Montreal. Like, I give them credit. They trailed the whole game, like literally from the first shift. Like, the Kings had so much pressure. And they hung in there. They hung in there until late. And, like I say, LA's an interesting team. Like they underwhelm you because they have a lot of nights where they don't generate much, but you get them on home ice. And again, because of that massive road trip to start the year, they have a huge home schedule once this thing, you know, settles after the break. Anyway,
they have 21 of their last 31 games at home, yeah, and they've only lost 3 regulation games at home. The best, like, not percentage-wise home record, but the mm-hmm. least amount of regulation loss.
We're being told to go home as well for
we'll
a
see
few
you
more
Monday.
Days. I'll see you Saturday for the Sabres game night experience starting at 7:30.